Laura Levin interviewing Mr. Herbert Finder, tape 2, side 1, continuing our discussion of March 19, 1987. Now, Herbert, would you be good enough to tell us a little about the conditions under which you were taken to Drancy? You were taken from...
Did we go over that in the last tape?
All right. And you arrived in Drancy...
Well, I arrived in Drancy approximately August 31st, 1942.
And... You were with your father.
I was with my father, and we came from Camp Duvernay.
Duvernay,
mm-hmm. in southern France, which was not very far from where we were arrested by the French gendarmerie. We lived in France 25 kilometers from Toulouse in a small village, which is not very far from Duvernay. We were, and from Duvernay to Drancy, we were transported in regular passenger train. And if I recall, it was like an overnight journey. We left in the afternoon Duvernay, and the next day we arrived in Drancy.
Where did any officials who might have been around tell you you were going, if they told you anything?
At Duvernay?
On the train.
No, I don't recall.
You don't recall.
I don't recall.
And were there many people, many Jews on the train?
Yeah, there was a special train from Duvernay to Drancy. There was no other passengers on the train except people that were
in the camp.
Yeah, Jews from that camp.
Were there several dozen, several hundred?
Oh no, there were no dozens, there were hundreds of
hundreds,
people.
So there were several, many
yeah.
cars.
Oh yeah, there were many cars. Of passenger cars.
And were you given any food? Do you remember?
I don't remember, but there were, I mean, the conditions were not
not
bad.
Too bad.
No, there were no exceptional conditions.
And the conductors were French. The trainmen were French.
Yeah, it was all French, yeah.
And so no one, as far as you remember, told you where you were going or why you were leaving the camp? Or did your father remember?
I can't remember exactly what happened at that time.
So you arrived at Drancy.
Yeah, I arrived at Drancy August 31st, 1942. And there we were assigned a room, I mean, with other people. And we were there until September 4th, 1942.
Just a few days.
Yeah.
I see.
Just a few days.
And you were with your father all that time?
Yeah, I was with my father all the time. As a matter of fact, we were together with other people that were arrested at the same time. There was only one family in that village that was arrested that were also Jews from Vienna.
Mm-hmm.
The man was a rabbi,
mm-hmm.
and he was arrested with his wife and two small children.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I remember his name. His name was Hager.
Uh-huh.
And we were together on the train from Duvernay to Drancy, and we were also then shipped together from Drancy to the east.
To the east. Now, do you remember any experiences you had at Drancy?
Well, the only experience I remember at Drancy is we were given food at Drancy. And
by French?
It was all French.
Staff, all French.
French staff, yeah. French and Jewish staff.
Jewish staff.
Mm-hmm. And we were given food, and we had a bed to sleep in. And the last day, I only remember the last day before we left, they cut everybody's hair.
Did they tell you why?
Just to, in order to, for cleanliness.
Sanitary reasons. Was the treatment pretty decent in those few days? You don't remember?
Yeah, there was nothing exceptionally.
Being scolded or beaten, something like that?
No, nothing like that. Nothing like that whatsoever.
And you were put on a train at Drancy?
Yeah. And we were actually left on September 4th, 1942. Mm-hmm. And it was the 28th convoy of deported Jews leaving for the East.
Convoy?
28th.
From France?
From France, the 28th. Yes.
So presumably there had been 23 others leaving? 27 rather, leaving Drancy, from
before.
Drancy before.
Yeah, before September 4th.
Uh-huh. And how long were you on the train to the East?
I don't remember exactly whether it was 2 days or 3 days. I don't remember exactly.
Did you have a place to sit down?
Yes. Then we were strictly in what the French call cattle cars. I mean, there was no more passenger cars. There were cattle cars, and we were together, not separated. I mean, men, women, children in the same car. There was enough room in each car for people. Still had luggage, and I mean, everybody had a suitcase of clothing. Mm-hmm. Nothing was yet taken away from anybody. Everybody was still allowed to have their personal belongings with them.
Excuse me, I'm going to close the... And you had been told that you were going, quote, to the East.
Yeah.
By people at Drancy.
Yeah.
Do you remember any anxiety on the part of your father or any other adults at the time?
Not really. I can't. All that stands vividly in my mind was not so much my personal reaction, but the children of that family who was with us, and they were small children. The boy was maybe 5 or 6, and the girl was 8 or 9. And I remember them being very upset when they cut their hair off in Drancy before. And I remember the children were more, and it stands vividly in my mind that they were very upset. Personally, I don't remember.
Did you see those children on the train?
Yes, we were together. Matter of fact, we were in the same.
They were still upset.
Yeah, they were in the same car.
Yes. And so after 2 or 3 days, you arrived.
After 2 or 3 days, the train had stopped. Well, there were several stops in between, but the train just stopped, and the doors were opened on the train from the outside. I mean, you could not open the doors on the inside. Doors were open, and we heard a German voice calling, I mean, German soldier calling, all men from the age of 16 to the age of 45 to get off the train. Mm-hmm. And this was at not really at the railroad station, it was rather in a rather deserted railroad siding. And
were you in Poland yet, do you think?
Yes, it was in Poland.
Mm-hmm.
It was in Poland. It was actually what in Germany was called Oberschlesien Osten, East
Ost.
Yes. It was not very far from Katowice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It was, according to records I have, the name of the place was Kosel.
How would that be spelled?
K-O-S-E-L.
K-O-S-E-L. Was this the place that you were looking for on the map?
Yeah.
Did you happen to find it?
No. So anyway, well, the name of the place is not that important because it was not the station. And so all the men whoever wanted to. Nobody was really forced to leave the train. There was no German soldier went up on the train to check if people got off or not. Whoever got off the train, they had to line up in front of the train, and opposite us was a row of German soldiers, one next to the other, the whole length of the train. And we were told to line up one next to the other, and a few minutes later passed by a German SS, they call him a Sturmbannführer, and he selected the men who I told him to either to go on the other side, a little bit away from the train, there was like a little area, assembly area, to go over there, or he told him to go back on the train. And I was standing next to my father, and next to that other man who, from that family who was with us. And my father and that other man, and Mr. Hager, that he told to go to that assembly area. To me, he told to go back up on the train. Because I was only 13 years at the time, of course I had not told him that, but I mean, according to, I was not as big as a 16-year-old, although I was rather tall for my age all along. I was always tall for my age. But anyway, he had told me to go back up on the train. But I mean, he did not stop and wait for anybody, whether the father is older or not, he just kept on going from one car to the other. And so my father immediately left for the assembly area, and I just stood on the bottom without going anywhere. So then the German soldier standing opposite me was maybe a distance of maybe 10 feet, 15 feet. I mean, the distance was not very great. And he asked me in German, why don't you go back on the train? Mm-hmm. Now I answered him in German, because German was my native tongue, and that my father went over there in the other area, and I would like to go there too in order to be together with my father. I mean, not knowing really why he was sent there.
But you wanted to be with him.
I just was there because although more on the train, most of the people were families. My father and I were just the two of us. There was no question of family. So I wanted to just be together with my father. So the German soldier told me then in German, when the Obersturmbannführer will come back again, because he had to come back the same way, just tell him, stop him and tell him that you are 16 years old, mm-hmm. and that you want to go to work. And a few minutes later, after the Sturmbannführer returned from, after he had gone all the way to the end of the train, he returned, and I stopped him and said, Herr Obersturmbannführer, I'm 16 years old and I want to go to work. So he said, go to work. And this is how I rejoined my father, who was only a short distance, a few hundred feet away. And then they closed the doors of the train, and the train just pulled away. And we were just almost like left stranded there.
About how many do you think there were?
I would say we probably were maybe 100 people, 100, 150 people, maybe 200.
Most went back on the train.
No, most of the men really, because there was only men between 16 and 50 were supposed to go come down. Mm-hmm. So I would say most men were selected, the stronger ones were selected to go to the
to work
area, and the others were supposed to go back on the train.
And how long did you have to wait at this assembly point?
Oh, I don't know. I think this was late in the afternoon. I think we stayed there like a few hours. And then talks came and we were taken away to a work, to a camp. And the name of the camp was Tarnowitz in German.
Tarnowitz.
Tarnowitz. In Polish it's called Tarnowski Góra. That's how it's listed on all maps today. Tarnowski
Góra. G-U-R-A.
Yeah, Tarnowski Góra. That's mm-hmm. a Polish name. In German it's Tarnowitz.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a work camp under the direction of the German, of the Germans. It was strictly, the function was to work for the German railroad. It was basically a work camp for working on the German railroad.
Were you laying tracks?
Yes. Now we got to the in the train administration on the inside was really already pretty well established, and it was mostly in the hands of Polish Jews who were recruited at that time from that area, and they were like the in charge of the kitchen, in charge. There were even women, Polish Jewish women, young women, young, and they were in the kitchen, working the kitchen, and the whole camp only consisted of a few hundred people.
And you were the youngest?
I was the young. I know, I was the youngest, in that camp.
Mm-hmm.
And when we went the first day from the camp to the work place, which was outside the camp, I mean, every day we had to walk to the workplace, which was along the railroad, and we were building railroad siding, enlarging the railroad station and so on. The man in charge of the project wanted to know what I was doing there.
Jewish man?
Yeah, the Jewish man, who was, I mean, from the inside man, who was in charge. He says, what are you doing here? You cannot work as hard as the others. I'm going, from now on you should stay inside the camp. I don't want you on the workplace. But then the German engineer, he was from Düsseldorf. He was in charge of the construction of the rail. He said, no, I want this boy to come every day. I want him to come here on the workplace every day, and I want him to carry my equipment. Mm-hmm. It was like engineering equipment.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I worked there every day. And
and father was actually doing the heavy work,
yeah,
laying the tracks.
Laying
the
tracks.
Mm-hmm.
Now the other man who was with us, that Rabbi Hager, mm-hmm. he did not last very long. He died within a very short time.
By the way, what happened to his children? They went on that train.
They were left on the train.
By
with everybody else. No, with his wife.
The wife was there.
The wife was
so home. They went straight on to Auschwitz, presumably.
Yeah.
So he perished quickly.
Well, the people that could not work anymore, that just got weakened off after, he never knew what happened to them, but every few weeks there came a truck and they were loaded up on the truck from the camp and they were sent, presumably to Auschwitz, to be gassed. And there was the ones that were not able to continue. Because I remember one day during the winter of 42, I became very sick. And the Jewish camp leader told me, don't stay, no matter how sick you are, don't stay in the camp, because today they will come and pick up everybody who cannot work anymore.
Did you get something to eat that could keep you sustained?
Well, we got, actually we only really got one meal a day. We got a piece of, every evening we got a bowl of soup and a piece of, and a portion of bread, and that was our
sustenance.
That was our sustenance for the day. Now, if you wanted to save part of it for the bread for the next day. There was the
nothing for breakfast.
No, there was one allocation, one daily allocation. And during the day, this became and breakfast we got they call coffee in the morning, like a black brew, but nothing else.
Nothing
and,
to
and
eat.
The same we got at noontime also, like black brew.
There was nothing in the fields that were that was growing that you could pick.
Well, we were not really working on the field, we were working on railroad side.
No yeah. growths?
No. Well, occasionally, I mean, we would get sometimes civilian would throw food at us, or mm-hmm. Polish civilian, or even sometimes even some of the German guards would give you, you know.
How about this German who wanted you to carry his equipment? Did he ever give you any food?
No.
No. Did you stay by his side?
No,
most
no,
of the
not,
time?
Not, no,
no.
And then later, I was many being that I was the youngest. A lot of my function was to build fires for the German guards. You know,
in their barracks?
Was
wind,
no, yeah. outside, like
outside.
Campfires.
To keep them warm.
To keep them warm, because I mean, we were not inside a camp. You know, we were really outside, and it was their function to every guard was assigned a certain amount of. Prisoners,
mm-hmm.
we call
so
it häftlinge.
They
were so. That was more one of my functions: either carry the equipment or to make fire or mm-hmm. to do all kind of different or go for coffee. I mean,
for them.
For them, yeah. Do all kinds of different.
But you didn't get any special favors from them in the way
no,
of food.
No. On occasion, someone would give you something, but it was really nothing.
And were you near? Father most of the time?
Yeah.
Did you see
yeah.
each other every day?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah
and
we
you slept
we,
in the same
we
bunk?
We slept in the same barracks.
In the same barracks.
In the same barracks.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we got, you know, food, what they thought would sustain the people to do their work, because that was their function.
It was not manufactured work. This
no,
was
no,
genuine
it was strictly
work.
Construction
this
work.
This was genuine work.
Genuine.
It had a purpose.
Yeah, it had a purpose for the German railroad.
The
it
German
was No,
railroad.
It was not work that...
Made work.
No, no, it was strictly work for the German railroad to keep the...
Now, were the guards SS men, or were the people you came in contact with army people?
It changed.
It changed.
Some of them were SS men, some of them were SA men, some of them were soldiers, like, on leave from the army, I mean, not on leave, like, recuperation from the Eastern
right.
Front. Sometimes our guards are very old men. It always changed.
I see. Okay.
It always changed.
And what about the composition of the workers? Did you, of course, many just fell,
yeah.
collapsed, so
yeah.
there was,
yeah.
I guess, a great deal of turnover.
No, but really, it just reduced itself.
Reduced.
Yeah, we did not get...
No new
people
groups.
Came. No new. I don't remember of any new group that came to us.
Mm-hmm.
Now the inside administration was strictly run by Jews, and the outside leadership, you know, there's always one Jewish couple responsible for a group, then towards the German
mm-hmm.
authority. German authority.
Did you have any contact with the inside Jewish?
Leadership? Oh yeah, constantly, because they were in charge of distributing the food on the inside.
Oh, they distributed the food.
Yeah, yeah. There was there was no German really involved in the administration of the camp whatsoever.
Did the Jewish people inside eat better than you did? As
oh yeah, well, sure, they had access to the kitchen. They were the food.
So they didn't share.
No, no, they had all the food. I mean, mm-hmm. If X amount of food was given for the camp, they would take whatever they wanted and distribute. They were in authority charge.
Mm-hmm. And they were mostly from Poland.
Yeah, they were mostly from Poland, from that area.
From
they were really from
right
that
area.
From that area.
All right, and did you? Get any rumors, did you hear any rumors, any reports about what was happening outside your own little area?
The only thing we heard is what sometimes the German soldiers would tell us. Now, we knew about the German defeat at Stalingrad.
Did you?
Because the German soldier would tell us, especially when I would build a fire from a standing. And I had the advantage that I spoke German, because very few people all spoke German, because all the transport that came was from Western Europe, mm-hmm. so not many spoke German. So, I mean,
that was an advantage.
It was an advantage.
Did you get the feeling that they realized that this was a very great defeat for them?
Well, the only one recollection I have was of this German SR man telling me that they really feared the Russians. They did not want to be captured by the Russians because they knew of the atrocity that the Germans committed while advancing on the Russian front. And the example he gave was they would tie people around a tree and then douse them with water in the winter time, in the cold of the winter, and the people would just freeze up. And we also suffered tremendously from the cold, because the problem was all the time that we worked outdoors all the time, and whenever we came back, we had to stand for hours in front of the barracks for the count to come out.
Now, you didn't get any special clothing for the winter?
No, our clothing was very, very...
Did you have boots?
No, our clothing was very, very minimal.
Just shoes?
As a matter of fact, at that time we still had our civilian clothing.
That
we were not even issued any clothing with them, whatever people brought with them. But eventually people died, and it became that one took the clothing from another. And
did you have a coat?
Yeah, we had a coat. Yeah. And what I was going to say, now there was a chance, people didn't attempt to, but we were not guarded that heavily that some people could not escape. But it was made clear that for everybody that was missing, a certain amount of would be shot inside. And at one time, really, somebody was missing, and every tenth person in the row that was standing, they would just pull them out and they would shoot them. So I mean, there sort of was a big deterrent about escape. And the second biggest deterrent was that there was the reason for them to send Western Jews to Poland for work camp, because nobody knew the language, people didn't know the language, didn't know the area, they didn't know where they were. So that was the other biggest deterrent. And we were in that particular camp for about 6 months, until the spring of 1943. In 1943, they took everybody that was left in that camp, and they closed that camp down, and they sent us, including the Polish Jews that were in authority, that were in charge, and they sent everybody to a work camp in Sosnowitz. Sosnowitz is just outside of Katowice. Now, this was not a very great distance. I think only maybe an hour or two.
May I ask, was the work on the railroad finished?
No.
No.
No. I don't know by what decision they decided all of a sudden
I
to
guess
move.
The moving of the front?
No.
The victory at Stalingrad made some change?
No.
Well, all right, so you...
I really don't know why they...
They may not have had a good reason either. Sometimes there were just...
Because the camp at Sosnowitz was basically the same thing. But there we was already an established camp, I mean, or maybe they didn't have enough people left there to do any productive work, I just don't know.
So you resumed the same kind of work?
It will resume the same general type of work. We were in a little camp, there was also a few hundred people in barracks, in Sosnowitz, and every day we were taken by train to Katowice. And that was, we worked at the main railroad station in Katowice, and we were also building, building a railroad station.
Then you were doing heavier work.
Then we were doing heavier work.
I mean, you personally.
Yeah, then I was already doing heavier work. And basically, the purpose of that was to build supply lines to the east for the German troops. Now, we saw many, while working on the main line, we saw many German troops trend for going east.
Going east.
Yeah, we saw many what the Germans would call lazarette trains, lazarette hospital trains coming west.
Lazarus.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we also saw many movement of Volksdeutsche from Russia moving back
west.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yes.
So due to the fact that we worked on those main lines, we always saw that all those trains traffic going all different directions.
Did you hear any rumors or reports about Auschwitz or the fate of Jews in the East?
No. Well, we were in the East actually, but we didn't.
But you didn't know what that meant.
No,
trains going quote to the East. You didn't know where they were going.
No, we never. That we did not see any trains of Jews going. We did not see.
You didn't hear about.
No,
those.
We did not hear about. Not to my recollection.
And at Sosnowitz, you also were in the company of Polish Jews.
A few, yeah, but most of the Jews there also were from the West.
And how about the... This is tape two, side two, continuing our talk with Mr. Finder. Was the food any better here? Herbert?
No, it was just about
same
the
same thing.
It was the same thing. There was not big, really. It was just that it was a different location.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it was more concentrated. We worked more, the whole camp more worked in one general area, so we had less mm-hmm. contact with civilian, with Polish civilian or German civilian than we had in Tarnowitz.
Mm-hmm.
And the administration was a little bit more cruel.
More cruel.
Yeah, more cruel. But basically we got one ration of food a day, and that was supposed to last it until next
day.
Every evening.
Did you suffer ill health besides, I'm sure, loss of weight?
No.
Were your father ill during any of this period?
No. But many people, many people died through lack of loss of food. And so basically, the population in the camps decreased continuously.
And did you get new transports to this camp? Or was it just thinning out?
No, it was just a general thinning out, a continuously thinning out of people that felt that, they were beaten on the work. If you didn't move fast enough, you were beaten continuously. And as you got weaker, your condition became worse because you could not keep up with the other people.
Yes.
And we were there until November 1943. In November 1943, the camp was also dissolved, mm-hmm. and they were put on a train and shipped to Birkenau. So that was then our first experience with Birkenau.
By train or again by truck?
By train. Yes. Mm-hmm. But that was only a very short distance away. Now, whether at that time they dissolved all those little labor camps or not, I don't know. But from there, when we arrived in Birkenau, we arrived there in the late evening. But there was no selection because these were already all only men, only working men. In other words, it was not a transfer that came with white women, children, and so on. Mm-hmm. All I remember that we was entered into Birkenau at night, and we were put in the barracks, and there we got our tattoo.
Were you whipped off the platforms by the guards? Did you see Mengele?
No, there was no selection. There was no guard. There were, yeah, we were with the dog guard. Was German with dogs mainly, and we were chased into a barrack where we were.
Which had already been occupied, or was it?
No, it was first an empty, not a barrack, not occupied, but it was a barrack where we received the tattoo on our hand. Everybody in Dachau, in Auschwitz, out of Birkenau, got their tattoo, their number, mm-hmm. and I have a number 160,440, which was the consecutive number given at that time, and my father has 160,441. Mm-hmm. And
were you still with the group from Sausnitz?
Yeah, yes, basically, but then we were split up, I guess, into smaller groups and put into barracks, large, they were already very large barracks. Okay,
yes.
So we arrived in Birkenau, after an acid tattoo, we were chased into
a very large barrack.
A very large barrack, and everybody just had to find an empty space. Mm-hmm. The bunks are three high and so three people wide. We always laid in the same bunks with three people wide and three people high. And that was our first experience to...
It must have been very cold by this time.
It was around the beginning of November 1943. Now, in Birkenau, we were not assigned to any workforce. We were just staying there. Every morning we were chased out of the barracks, and we had to do calisthenics outside, or we had to roll in the mud, or we had to go out and carry stones from one area to another area. Just busy work, mm-hmm. and mostly were chased by Germans with dogs to hurry up from one area. And then another group would pick up the stones again, and this was a constant harassment, not like before, it was productive, but this was mainly taken out of Birkenau and carry stones.
Senseless.
Yeah, and continually chasing the dogs and rushing around back and forth. And this lasted for about 3 weeks.
Did you get any information about what was happening in the outside world from any of the prisoners?
No, there we were very isolated.
Mm-hmm.
In Birkenau, nobody really was much. When we saw the crematorium,
did
we
you?
Knew about the gas, then we knew already about the gas chambers and the inmates.
This was our first experience,
because you could see the smoke. I mean, we were right in the middle of this large camp.
The crematoria were close enough.
We were right there. We were right inside that area. We could see the smoke, but we didn't see any. I never saw any trains arriving or any selection or anything like that.
Did anyone tell you where you were going? What would happen to you?
In Birkenau.
In Birkenau.
No.
Any of the
nobody really knew how long this would last or what would happen. Nobody really knew anything. And after 3 weeks, we had to assemble every day, every night. We had morning we had assembly, night assembly, and one evening assembly day, they just called out that these and these names should line up on the other side. And my name and my father's name was among that list that we had to line up on the other side. And it was many people from our transport from Sosnovyi.
Mm-hmm.
And they were mostly Jews that originally came from Western Europe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We didn't know why we had to line up there, but we had to line up there, and we were not allowed back into the barrack with you. And then we had to walk to Auschwitz. Auschwitz was an adjoining camp to Birkenau. And we walked to Auschwitz, and Auschwitz we were given new clothing. We were given clothing, we were shaved. We were told
your hair hadn't been shaved. It had been shaved.
Yeah, but I mean, they had shaved again. Yeah. We'd be shaved again. We were given new clothing, and we were told to take showers. We were in the shower area to take showers. Mm-hmm. And we stayed there one night.
Let me backtrack for a minute. Did you have a chance to bathe in the other places at all? Did you get any soap at any time?
On occasion.
On occasion.
Very, very, very seldom.
Seldom.
Yeah. Most of the time we undressed on the outside, went in the shower, even in the middle of winter, no matter how cold it was, we always undressed on the outside, left our clothes on the outside, went inside, showered, came out again, put on our clothes again.
The old clothes.
Yeah.
But now at Auschwitz you got it with, was it hot water?
I don't remember, it was hot water or cold water. But anyway, we were told to shower. We had to be shaved in, and I mean, it was all under a lot of commotion.
Mm-hmm.
And then we were given some food, and we slept there one night in the barracks. We had to stay there one night.
Mm-hmm.
And we were separated from the other people from that camp, except the ones, the Jews again, the couples, and the ones that were in charge.
Mm-hmm.
And we stayed there one night, and the next night, the next day rather, we were put on train
mm-hmm.
and shipped out.
Mm-hmm.
And then we were shipped out to Warsaw.
To Warsaw.
Warsaw.
And now this is...
This was November 1943.
Still November.
Yeah, we were only 3 weeks.
3 weeks.
It was, to the best of my recollection, it was late November.
Late November. And now you're part of a commando to clean up the ghetto.
Now, when we arrived in Warsaw, there were already there 5,000 men from Auschwitz were sent to Warsaw already earlier that fall. And they already had set up barracks. And this location,
in the ghetto or in...
We were right inside the ghetto.
Inside the ghetto. Had you heard at all about Warsaw ghetto?
No, we didn't.
Nothing about the revolt, for instance. What did you find besides the barracks?
In the ghetto?
In the ghetto.
Well, it was like two... It was a small camp inside a large camp. In other words, our barracks were surrounded by wall with barbed wire on top, with guard towers and Ukrainian soldiers guarding them.
Did you see any of the rubble of the destroyed
Now, then this was inside the ghetto. The ghetto again was around, surrounded by the other wall. So we had a small camp inside a large camp, which was really the ghetto.
Mm-hmm.
We never got out of the ghetto. Every morning we walked out, we were sent out or out of this camp into the ghetto area under supervision by
Ukrainians.
No, we actually were not guarded then, because the whole thing was one big camp. The ghetto was one big camp, but at night we had to
go into your smaller
into the smaller camp. And basically it was again the inmates themselves who had risen to higher positions, who led the people to work, who got their orders, from the Germans. But all administrations, I want to emphasize, all administrations for all the camps up to now and even later was always done by inmates.
And in your case, Jews.
Yeah, the first time we were exposed to non-Jews was in Birkenau, in Auschwitz, and in Warsaw. In Warsaw we had a contingent of German non-Jews who were also inmates of the camp.
Mm-hmm. I see. These were political prisoners, do you think?
Some were political, yeah. We were lived in the same barrack, mm-hmm. but they were in charge, you know, they were given the administrative positions. They were in charge of the barracks, they were in charge of the camp, they were in charge of the work
rations.
Details, of the rationing, of the food, of mm-hmm. the kitchen.
And how did they treat you?
Well, they were almost equal except for their position. I mean, they were couples. Actually, the worst couples were the Jewish couples.
Is that so?
The Jewish couples were responsible for many deaths, mm-hmm. More than the German. Mm. Than German couples.
How do you interpret that?
We were suffered much more viciously from Jewish.
In these other labor camps?
Yeah, in these other labor camps.
More beatings?
Yeah. Well, there were no, in the other labor camps, there were no non-Jews. Everything was under Jewish administration. Up to the outside world, of course, the engineers, the people in charge of construction were non-Jews. But everything else was done.
I wonder if there was some cultural antagonism, Polish Jews. As
no, some of them later
Western.
Were not really Polish Jews. There were some German Jews there.
Who also were...
It was more that they wanted to protect their status. They thought their status would guarantee them a longer survival.
And if and they were harsh, they would last
yeah,
longer.
Yeah, it was basically to gain the favor of the Germans. And many German soldiers were not very impressed by them, really did not like them too much. Because they could not see that the Jews should really
show that much power or authority.
Power and authority. Uh-huh. I mean, I'm talking about the SS who was in charge of it. I'm talking mainly about German soldiers guarding. Doing guard duty, not the SS,
not the SS,
who was in charge of the
camp itself. Yeah. Excuse me, go ahead.
Now in Warsaw, the Germans that were in the camp were mostly, there were different categories. There were some that were old political prisoners mm-hmm. that had been in prison since 1933, and who also very few have survived down the road. Then there were just
so-called antisocials.
Antisocials.
Yes.
They were people that were thieves on the outside, criminals.
Did you encounter some homosexuals?
Homosexuals,
too?
Yeah.
And they were all mixed?
All mixed.
All mixed.
All mixed.
And of course, many non-Jews.
Yeah, well, there were a smaller portion of the camp. They were in, and the reason was what some of them had told me. Why they were there, because that if they had gotten a prison sentence, the anti-social, I'm not talking about the political,
yeah.
during Hitler's regime, let's say, for several years in prison, afterwards he would not let them back out into the
society.
But he sent them to concentration camps. You know, from prisons, they went to concentration camps. And because they were German, they got a little better treatments, they got become more authoritative treatment. So they had
did
more
they get
food.
Better? They did get better
they
food.
Had, well, it was like everything else. Everybody, a certain amount of food was given by the Germans for everybody. And whoever was in charge took care of himself first.
Yeah. Was the food here a little better for you?
In Warsaw? Mm-hmm. Warsaw was one of the very poorest conditions that we had.
Oh my.
Yeah. First of all, the winter was very cold. And from 5,000 that were there in November, by January, there was only 1,000 left of us. Mm. And this was due to a typhus epidemic.
Typhus?
Yeah. Of course, there was no difference whether it was German or Jews or, I mean, typhus
did
know any difference.
Did you encounter any Polish civilians during this time?
Yes, that was my next. During the day, there was Polish civilians inside the big camp, inside the ghetto, and they were also there for the same function of cleaning up the camp. And
now,
from them we got some news then, of course.
News.
And
what did they tell you, for instance?
Well, now, see, the news was that very few of them could speak anything but Polish. And most of the
inmates
did not speak Polish. Now, my father was one of the few who did speak Polish. And as a matter of fact, many of the Germans sort of
used him
to interpret, because he originally had come from Poland and migrated to Vienna. And then, of course, he became a Western. See, the Germans, for some reason, did not take into consideration that among those Western Jews might be some Polish Jews, or maybe they did, maybe they just, or something. So many of the German couples used him to relate to the Polish civilization. That's when we find out what really happened in Warsaw during that time and what happened.
Some of the civilians told you about the destruction of the ghetto.
Yeah, they told us about it. But we saw the destruction because we were among the destruction.
Yes, when you saw the rubble.
Yeah, we were inside the rubble.
And so you knew that there had been
some resistance. Yeah, then we knew exactly.
Did any of the civilians bring any food to you?
Well, they would bring if we could pay for it.
How were you supposed to pay?
Well, at the first one that came before us did find some things in the old ghetto yet while cleaning up, and they would trade it with them. Now later, the later one, sometimes you'd find something, sometimes you would steal something, there was, in Warsaw itself, for some reason there was plenty of food available.
Is that so?
Yeah, because they would bring in, I mean, the Germans had money, somehow they were, and they would trade with the Poles. Well, if you had the zlotys, their currency, they would bring you white bread, salam, whatever you wanted, but the most of the Jewish inmates didn't have any money.
Nothing.
Now, one thing happened, which saved my father's life and my life, actually later, was that he had some gold teeth. And he extracted them and would sell them to the Poles.
He could do that himself?
Well, some of that was done, you know, like he had those gold crowns. Of course, although the German had registered everybody that had gold crowns, but at that point nobody really worried that much about it.
So he used that as a bargaining chip?
Yeah,
for
money, and then the money you would get. But I mean, I'm really getting ahead of it because, like I said, most of the camp died of the typhus epidemic. Not most, but almost three-quarters of the camp died.
And you fell ill too?
I had typhus, my father had typhus.
Were you able to go to any kind of...
Well, there were barracks where they just put the sick people. Now, people did not really die from typhus. How did the typhus spread? It spread because you didn't get any change of clothes for 2 months. No change of clothes, no washing, there was no facilities whatsoever. And so typhus is spread by lice, and that's how it spread. Now, most people did not die from the typhus, they died afterwards, because everybody got so weakened from it that unless you had opportunity to get some extra food, you could not get any. So that's when my father would sold the gold teeth, and we got a little bit extra food, and somehow we survived. And many of the Germans died.
Is that so?
Proportionately even more than the Jewish, because they were stronger, they were bigger, you know, because they had more. And they're all saying the bigger you are, the harder the fall. And that's exactly happened very truthfully, because bigger people need more food. So they also,
Now, when you say you were there to clean up the ghetto, what did that mean, actually?
We were going out there where the buildings and clean up brick by brick, and we would clean the bricks, and then they would ship the bricks out somewhere. That was basically to clean the bricks, to clean the
Send them to Germany, presumably.
I don't know. And there were a lot of Poles working in the ghetto, too. They worked to tear down the walls because it was dangerous. They had those walls of the building standing and just single walls, and that was basically the function.
You didn't find any Jews in any bunkers?
No.
Or did you hear about any Jews who survived in bunkers?
No, well, that was so much later. I mean, the uprising was in 19...
No, I mean, presumably there were still some Jews left in the ghetto after May of 44, but you're speaking now of November.
November, yeah. From November there.
Yeah. And so you stayed in the ghetto for how long?
We were there until April 44. Not April, I'm sorry. Until July 44.
July 44. Now, how long was your father sick?
The typhus?
Yes.
We were all sick a few days, a week. I don't even, the time must have been delirious at the time, because I don't even remember what happened.
You were delirious?
Yes, during that time.
Did anybody give you any kind of care?
No, there was no care.
There were no women around?
No, there was no women.
This is an all-male...
There was, there was no women in the camp at all. There was
no medicine.
No,
no medicine.
No. There were some doctors, inmate doctors, but I mean, there was
They couldn't help?
No.
So it was just your own body
that fought
it?
Yeah, you survived or you didn't survive, and that's why so few survived.
So you were ill probably for several months?
No, typhus lasts only about a week.
But when
then
it recovered...
Yeah, the recovery was, yeah.
Then you were very weak, debilitated.
Weak.
Were you able to somehow work?
Well, the ones that were able to work, and the others just died.
So you and father eventually went back to work?
Yeah.
And stayed at this work until July 44.
Yeah.
Now, were you getting any news about German defeats on the fronts?
Well, yes. We knew pretty much what was going on through the Poles that entered the camp. But there, the camp was replenished. See, after we were down to a few, we got new transports from Auschwitz all the time. So the population remained fairly constant in Warsaw.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the camp population.
The camp, yes.
After that, we got Hungarian Jews. There we got the first transport of Hungarian Jews in 1944.
Mm-hmm.
Came to Auschwitz, to Warsaw, from Auschwitz.
Yes.
And
were you getting any more news about what was happening at Auschwitz?
Well, I guess by that time we pretty knew.
You knew what was going on. Yes. And were you able to communicate with the Hungarian Jews at all?
No, we were all in together. I mean, whoever spoke German, they spoke German.
They spoke German. Was there some sort of communication, or did you keep separate?
No, it was all, everything. Wherever there was room in the barracks, there was really no separation.
No cultural difficulties.
No separation.
So you stayed there until July of 44. And
In July of 44, we were evacuated from, I mean, they closed up this whole camp in Warsaw. That happened when we heard already the bombing from the Russians, the artillery of the Russians, when they advanced towards Warsaw.
Uh-huh.
So the Russian army was getting very close.
Mm-hmm.
And they were fearing, and that's when started the revolt of the Polish Warsaw revolt started at that time.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I just want to bring up, before, while we were still in Warsaw, we knew about the atrocities that the Germans did in Warsaw. You know, we heard that every time a German would be killed, for example, they would just arrest 50 Poles anywhere on the streets of Warsaw, and they would bring him next to our camp, inside the ghetto, was the old Polish prison.
Uh-huh.
And there they would shoot them.
Was that Pawiak?
Pawiak. Pawiak was right next to our camp.
Uh-huh.
And they would, and then we had to dispose of the corpses. And as a matter of fact, they were, at that time, they were building even a crematorium in our camp.
Is that so?
But that was never really completed. But the way we had to bury, and we had to burn all the corpses, I mean, there was a special detail that did that. They would lay a layer of wood and a layer of corpses, and then just douse them, and we had like a pyre. It would burn for days, and that was continuously burning. But that was one of the functions, that all the Poles that were killed by the Nazis were brought into our camp. not to the inside of the camp, because but into the ghetto large area, into the larger area. Yeah. And there we had to dispose of them. And matter of fact, one time, one of the Poles that we worked with told my father, I mean, I could not talk to him, that the day before his son was caught up in one of those
conflagrations.
Well, yeah, in one of those where they would arrest them. Roundups.
But that was
that's
before.
That's how they terrorized the population against the revolting. Yes.
So this was, of course, before the Warsaw Revolt.
Yeah, that was before. That was during the spring. Yeah, during all the time that we were in Warsaw. And then when they were feared of the Polish revolt, they closed up and we walked out of the German guards and the prisoners, everybody just walked out of Warsaw. And we walked for 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
And we walked
west.
West, yeah. We walked to Lodz.
Did anybody tell you where you were going?
No.
Did you get anything to eat on this
trip? Well, no, I don't think we got anything to eat. We didn't get any water. Water was the biggest one because it was July and it was very hot. And we walked on the road and just, and whoever didn't keep up, they would just beat them or shoot them. And I know after a day or so we arrived at night we didn't walk,
mm-hmm,
because they were worried, they just
would escape.
They just put it inside a big field and they just would surround the field and...
The German guards,
I don't know, it was SS at that time.
Did you get any...
You might have gotten some food.
Some food from the civilians on the way?
No. It was all pretty well isolated.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember once we came to a river, and everybody just rushed into the river.
To drink
from the river. And the ones that got too far away, they would just shoot them. They got too far down.
Lots of people got sick from the water.
And then the next night, some miracle, we camped in a field, and people would start digging. And there must have been very low groundwater, because after we dug only a few feet, there was water. And everybody could, that was the first time everybody could just drink as much as they wanted, because there was just so much water.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, after you dug with spoons, a little spoon, all you had was spoon with spoons with big holes.
Mm. But no food.
No food. And that lasted for about, after the third day, we arrived at the railroad station. And then we were put on trains, and in big cattle trains, and shipped to Dachau. That was a journey of several days.
Several days.
And that was in July 1944.